This oral history is brought to you with the support of Guttman students and staff and funded by the American Council of Learned Societies and the Mellon Foundation. Enjoy.
My name is Ezequiel Isiano. I interviewed Chantal Tavera, Willow Cave in Bronx, New York. Today is Monday, 2 p.m., 2021. Orion History Project be conducted by Ezequiel Isiano, an interview as a student at Guttman Community College City, University of New York. By signing the form below, you will interview have granted permission for the audio and record note and transcript video and photography results from this interview. Interview will be given to the collection held at City of University of New York without any restriction. If you the interview have any granted permission to do the interview, might become part of a archive and the interview we made available for the use considered with the City University of New York permission regularly according to any reputation placed on the use by the interview or interview. Give me permission to do the interview.
Yeah, of course.
What is your name?
My name is Chantal Tavares.
How old are you?
I'm 25 years old.
Where are you from?
I'm born and raised in the Bronx.
What is your first language?
My first language is English.
What race and identity?
I'm white, essentially.
Tell me the long story of how your family ended in your city.
Yeah, so my mom actually came here when she was 20 years old on her own. She was very big on kind of just making it. She came here all by herself. So pretty much that's how my mom ended up here. I think my dad is the same way. I know less of his story compared to my mother's, but essentially it's the same. They immigrated here from Dominican Republic and then just established themselves.
Now we're gonna change the topic. Now we're gonna talk about COVID-19.
Cool.
How are you coping with the pandemic?
I've been doing okay. I think a lot of my time I spend self-caring in terms of running or just walking outside.
How has the coronavirus changed your life?
It has changed it a lot. I mean, in general, I transitioned from full-time work to part-time and also am a full-time student. So I isolated from coronavirus. I had changed myself, but with coronavirus, I think there's a lot of changes in just the general scheme of things.
Nice, that's nice. Do you know any of your family how closely do you have the COVID-19?
Yeah, so actually recently, a large extension of my family, my mom, my aunt, my father, my brothers, my cousin, they all got sick. So I spent a lot of time with my family during the pandemic. So I was very isolated and they were isolated too. And I did lose my grandfather and my great uncle as well. They were really sweet individuals. So I really do miss them.
So what was like to be home so often?
Yeah, it's a lot, especially when I was so accustomed to going outside for work or going to the gym. So having to find free time to do that separate from my work and my home has become difficult but still possible.
Okay, that was for everyone too. So how do you impact in the society and mentally and emotionally?
Yeah, I think socially I saw very little of my friends, but I did see my family, so that was okay on that end. Mentally, I think I was okay in the beginning. I think for a while I was kind of like, okay, this is my life now, so I kind of remained stagnated, but I think I'm okay now. I think this is just what life is, and humans are used to being adaptable to different situations, and this one's not. You know, we're privileged to have homes and just live and breathe. So I'm putting that into perspective. I'm okay.
I agree too. What did you learn about yourself and your family since the beginning of decreasing?
Yeah, I think I learned a lot about how important life is and how important family means to each other, but also like how humans can impact other humans, right? We learn that if you're not wearing masks, you can potentially make another person die, right? Or someone in their family die.
Yeah,
so
that's,
I think right.
That's right. What have been the hardest part of the pandemic for you?
I think it's kind of just being home all the time, like you asked me before. Being home all the time is taking a really major shift, something I wasn't really used to.
Have there been anything positive to come out of the pandemic for you?
I started running. That's about it, really. I don't run that much anymore.
That's good for your health.
Yeah, exactly.
What has been the favorite thing to do all of them?
I like to read. Before, I haven't read as much. So with the lockdown, I started reading so much more.
Okay. So how have COVID-19 changed and how you think about relationship between health, individual, as health and society?
Yeah, I think COVID has changed our mind frame into thinking that it's not just about, you know, just yourself in an individual sense, but also about how we think about the people in our society and even beyond that. It's not, I think the U.S. is known for being the most individualistic country, but I think in what the pandemic has showed us is that we do better when we think about other people.
It's like work more together.
Exactly. Yeah.
Okay. So how do you think the government handled the COVID crisis?
Not well. But again, like, I'm not in the government, so I don't know what is actually underlying the actual steps that are involved with the government. So
what is something that you like to change about the global pandemic?
I wish that, you know, when China had this influx of the pandemic, that Americans were more willing to help other countries as opposed to just closing out these countries. We have amazing healthcare staff and personnel, and it would have been awesome had the U.S. given our forces to help other people, even though we do have a tumultuous history with them.
That's nice. Mm-hmm. Do you would like to get the vaccine?
Yeah, of course.
Why?
I think it's important to get it because even if we don't, like, even though I'm younger than some, you know, older people, I have the possibility of spreading it to another individual without even knowing it. So if I can save another person's life by getting this vaccine, I'm willing to do it.
That's nice. How do you feel about the world reopening?
I think the world never really closed. I think maybe during the summer it did close, but I think the world has been slowly reopening and people have just been kind of ignoring the mandates of COVID anyway. So the world has always been open, just the door was slightly ajar.
I agree. Mm-hmm. Okay, so what was the first thing you're gonna do when when you have the freedom from this pandemic?
Yeah, hopefully go to Hawaii with my cousin. That's the goal.
That's nice. How do you feel? How do you think that we will be changed when we come out of the pandemic?
I think like what I said before in terms of like the world reopening, I think nothing really has much changed. I think people are more cautious. Some people are more cautious about hand sanitizers and all. But I think people really just want the world to come back to normal and they're continuing with their normal habits and routines. So I don't think much will really change.
So I believe in the future you're going to have children. So how are you going to talk about race or COVID to your child?
Yeah, I'm going to... Hopefully there'll be books available at that time so that I don't have to, like, how do I explain COVID to a little child? But it's possible, right? How do they explain, like, the plague to us when we were children?
Yeah.
Right, in that same way, it's like, it is a history lesson, but we can make it interesting, but also kind of resonate the importance of why it happens. And like why it's so important to have community within these times.
It's like more like a lesson that you're never going to forget.
Yes.
So, okay. So why is something that you learn about 2020 can be a lesson or anything that you experienced before?
Yeah, I think it's cherish the people that you're with, even if you don't know them, even if you do, because we don't know the next time we're actually going to see people.
It's like more appreciate people.
Yes, exactly. Even if you don't know them, it's just like have a certain courtesy for the people who are in your community, even though you've never spoken to them.
That's nice. Now we're going to talk about Black Matter protest. Do you remember where you were when you heard or hear about George Floyd murder?
Yeah. So I don't actually remember where I was. I don't have like an impeccable memory, but I do recall that I saw it on Instagram. So a bunch of the murders that happened during the summer, even Eric Garner, which is like the most poignant one for me, Breonna Taylor. A lot of it I heard from the internet. So yeah.
Okay, so that I feel like everybody use the internet now is like the more is the new now.
Yeah.
Okay, that's nice.
It's definitely the news. Like I don't watch TV anymore. I don't have access to a television frequently, so seeing it on social media is usually the way I go about seeing it.
What were some reasons that you think the protest, Black aliens and angry about the condition in the United States?
Yeah, what are they? I think, honestly, this is a repeating, like, infraction against Black people in America where, you know, it happens so consistently and it's so exposed in the media that, like, I feel that people have been desensitized to Black pain and Black experiences. So I think one of the reasons that it has erupted is that people in America, whether they're Black, white, or Asian, are noticing that minorities, and in this case, Black lives, are disproportionately being affected by laws, by housing laws. It's not just a one thing. It's not just because George Floyd died, right? It is because George Floyd died, because he's an important individual, but he's an individual that matters, but it's the whole ricocheting and the history that goes behind it as well.
Yeah, I
so
agree.
So he's a symbol.
Yeah, that I agree. Do you believe that one day we're going to have like an ending of racism in this country?
No. I mean, I want to say yes. And if we do, like maybe it'll be in the far future, but there's a lot of things that need to change, and there are a lot of people who want to need to change, and right now a lot of people don't want to change or even have those conversations.
Do you believe there are issues with the criminal justice system in the United States that have helped the flame of this protest?
I think the infrastructure of the United States has been based on inequality. Right, there are certain people who are above the cut. Like, I think while police officers do have a duty to protect and serve, right, we do look up to them. So there is some sort of power dynamic that we do expect. But because of this power dynamic, we don't know whether, well, we do know that race does play a role, but because the idea is that, no, we're serving you, this idea, this border between, say, like, protecting and, like, racism is kind of blurred. So we don't know what is actually happening, but we do. I mean, I believe we do know what's happening, but I think there's higher levels that are involved that are being overlooked.
How do you explain the perception of racism in the United States, generally in your city specifically?
I couldn't really tell you the persistence of racism. I think there's an underlying history that has kind of been entrenched into our history, or even like housing, right? There's certain areas in New York City that's particular to certain races, and you know how police guard those areas, or whether they arrest the, you know, specific people. And in this case, it's like, look at our criminal justice systems. It's disproportionately filled with Black individuals, Hispanic individuals, Asians, and it's weird because most of the United States is composed of white people. So how does that make sense? You know, it's not only that black people are committing crime, white people are too. But what does it mean in terms of sentences? But in terms of your question, like, how do you explain the persistence of racism? I think it's just deeply entrenched into the infrastructure of the United States.
It's like more in like inequality that we have now.
Absolutely.
Why do you think that the New York City became the epicenter of the protest?
I think it became the epicenter of protest because there's so many more people, right? We have more access to social media. The news constantly kind of goes around in these major cities, and news centers are in these major cities. So when you're in these bigger areas with epicenter, you have more presence of social media, and that's why it was so highlighted across the United States. Because if we were to look at like a small city in Kentucky, they don't care that a protest happened there compared to like a huge protest that happened to New York City. So that's why. Because I'm sure there were little big protests in other locations, but it just wasn't as huge as it was in New York City.
Okay, I agree.
Mm-hmm.
So do you have any story that we like to share about racism or police brutality?
I don't have any stories really. As a Latina that looks like a white woman, because, you know, I am a white woman, white facing at least, you know, I haven't had any issues with racism or with the police. However, I have been with people who have experienced racism like fully frontal on their faces. But it wasn't in the United States, it was more in Paris. I had a friend who I was staying with. The owner did not like this individual at all. So whenever this individual spoke to us, he would only talk to me.
So how do you feel like when you see someone close to you that was discriminated?
Yeah, so I think when I was younger, I never noticed. But now that I'm an adult and I realize the kind of context that we're in now, it becomes my obligation to make sure that the people who I'm with are protected, whether it means me standing in the way of certain types of individuals or highlighting that this, like, you know, my friend or whoever I'm near is not disrespected.
That's nice.
Mm-hmm.
Do you watch ITV in this protest in digital or in person over the 6 months?
I was involved more digitally as opposed to in person, just because I was with my family. My grandmother was staying with us at the time, so I did not want to go out and possibly like put her in harm's way. So a lot of what I was doing was more digital, posting certain things, donating money whenever I could to bail projects, or just making sure that information was disseminated around the area.
Okay, so do you have any thought or experience involved the protein with in painful to you, like, you know, that someone that have like involved in the protest?
I don't know someone who's been directly involved in the protest, but I do know I went to a school in Pennsylvania, and they opened up a kind of fund, so anyone who needs bail money or anyone who needs any help during this specific time during COVID, they collected donating money and funds for that specific, it's called the BICO Abolitionist Fund.
Can you say the name of the school?
Yeah, I went to Haverford College. This fund is a consortium between Haverford College and Bryn Mawr College. So if you guys want to donate money, they're doing amazing things. All proceeds actually go, full proceeds go to the people and the causes that they're supporting.
Okay. How have Black Matter shaped in the culture?
I think Black Lives Matter, the protests and just the programs that they've put into it, has really shifted it in terms of making these conversations much more accessible to everyone, not just Democrats who, you know, are exposed to these certain types of ideologies. Sometimes Democrats are not, but I feel like people in my own age range are often talking about specific policies or protests that have occurred. So hopefully what I think BLM has done, and what I've been reading about and just seeing in the news, it's expanding these conversations to people who typically wouldn't have these conversations, whether they agree or whether they don't agree. And I think that's what's important, having this new dialogue with people who typically would not have this dialogue. And that's what BLM has been constructing and doing in a very good way.
Yeah, that's nice. In the past few months, do you have any change about police and racism in the U.S.?
That's a good question. I don't think, right now, in my current thoughts, I don't think racism is going to go away anytime soon until we do a major upheaval and have more conversations. And like I've been thinking about this a lot. Like, nothing's gonna change in the U.S. or how the police is acting until people want to change. And right now, there's a lot of people in the U.S., and you can see this in our politics as well, of people not wanting to have these conversations because it doesn't go with their values or what they believe in. So while BLM has opened the conversation, we also see that a lot of people, while the door's there, they're not going to go through until something major happens. So I don't think that's really my opinion on racism and police.
I agree too. Do you learn about the history of racism in this country since the protest started?
Yeah, absolutely. I think when the protests, and obviously like there was a civil rights protest and we learned about it in school, but we always learn about it in a shallow, very shallow way. I think what this protest over the summer, because people were at home and more people were more willing to go out and protest, a lot of people were sharing resources and information about the history of racism and maybe the more even like subtle, more quiet racisms that exist, racism facets that exist within our country. So yeah, not only has social media in terms of posts and what people have been sharing, but also the resources that people have been sharing in this time.
Yeah, you can be more unite. What do you think there is so much backlash to Black Lives Matter?
I think there's a lot of backlash because of kind of the bad apples that existed. A lot of people go out to these protests and they do destruction and looting. So then what the media, at least what I saw the media do, was that they highlighted the destruction rather than the actual peaceful protests, right? Because if there had been more destruction, you know, we always see like whenever someone wins a football championship, mm-hmm. people destroy their cities.
Yeah.
If the protests had destroyed the cities, there would be no stores open or available, and we didn't see that.
Yeah, that.
You know, there was only a few stores that were disrupted. I mean, of course, there were damages and there were losses.
Do you feel that the news have more impact to the destruction of the city? Like, they make the news more extra that the people can complain about the protest?
Yeah, I think a lot of, yeah, absolutely. And having these little bad seeds here and there, this is what they focused on.
Yeah.
So it definitely made the protests look bad mm-hmm. and have this backlash. But at the core, the protests in general are supposed to be peaceful. There's a difference between having a protest and a riot. And the majority of the people who were there were protesting. They were not rioting.
I agree with you.
Mm-hmm.
So, how do you explain the fool who repugned Black Lives Matter with the All Lives Matter?
I think the people who support All Lives Matter, I think the general direction that they're going for is that, yes, of course, every life matters, whether you're Black, Asian, you know, Hispanic, whatever identity you are, right? This includes like gender identity, sexual orientations as well. But I think they're missing this greater piece, which is the idea that Black lives in America are disproportionately abused, neglected, arrested compared to any other minority or sexual minority group in the United States. And I think that's an important distinction that All Lives Matters is not picking up on.
Okay, that I feel that. Now we're gonna change a little bit the topic and we're gonna talk about 2021.
Okay, perfect.
What was your thought in your mind when you heard about the U.S. Capitol was in power?
I thought it was a joke, honestly, you know? I thought it was like a, you know, April Fool's joke really early because one, we're going through a whole pandemic. Joe Biden was just elected as the president. I really thought it was a joke. Like, I knew that people were in front of the Capitol, but like once I heard that they were gonna go inside and they were climbing the walls, I was really surprised, and I thought it was an entire joke.
Do you feel that Donald Trump have a lot of influence to the invasion to the Capitol?
Absolutely, I think. Also, he was outside in a tent waiting for this, so as if he knew that this invasion was going to happen. So, yeah, I think he has a lot of influence in what happened in the Capitol, and I think as a president, he misused his social media platform. You know, as the leader of the United States, you know, I have no problem with him being a president, but as the leader of the United States, you have to have a certain front, a united front as the president, whether you are a Republican or a Democrat, right? I don't care if, you know, he won the election fair and square, and I never said anything about that, but the fact that he kind of misused his political platform to highlight more division within our political parties was something that I was, this is probably more than the question that you're answering, but this is just how I'm feeling.
Yeah, I agree too. What do you think led these people to attend to violence overthrow the government?
I think, like you said, I think a lot of Trump supported their ideals and their vision, right? So these people were kind of helped by the message that Trump was trying to share. I don't know. In my short 25 lived years that I've had, I would have never anticipated people to gather into a federal, you know, break into a federal building. In my entire life, I've never thought that would have been a thing, but it happened.
What do you think about the treatment about the police to these all the white people? You think if we were gonna be like a Latino or a black guy?
Yeah, no, absolutely. Had it been a different population, I feel like there would have been tanks, there would have been dogs, there would have been like drones, all those, like, you know how like during the protests they had those rubber bullets that like knocked people's eyes out? I didn't see one single rubber bullet. I didn't see one single gas tank. I didn't see any of those things that were done on like those peaceful protests, even when they were looting, you know, or destruction, as the media likes to say. I did not see this at all.
No.
During this Capitol insurrection.
Yeah, you can see the inequality that we have in the system.
Heck yeah.
What do you think about the impatient treatment of former President Trump?
After the first one, I knew the second one wasn't going to go through. So the fact that, I think there's just a lot of things going on in our government that is being overlooked. Maybe even if it's not being overlooked, it's just being ignored. Or at least in our time frame, we're not able to change it because these systems have been so solidified that they work for only certain people.
Yeah.
So I think it's really a shame.
And also if they claim Trump, like, they're gonna look bad too.
Right, true, because it's a political party.
Yeah.
And they were supporting him this entire time, so it'd be weird if they didn't support him in this trial as well.
How do you explain the hostility between the two political parties?
I think it's definitely gotten worse under the Trump administration. I can't say, like, in comparison to any other administration, because I either was too young or I wasn't born. So I don't have much experience with understanding the hostility or how it's risen over time. But in the time that I've been cognizant of political parties, I feel like there was hostility, but now that hostility is much more present.
Let's say that Trump was like not a white person. They're gonna be like the impish treatment gonna be like more the same or different?
Well, it'd be different if so. I see what you're saying. I think it still depends on the political party, right? Like, let's say he was a black man, but he was still Republican. I think Republicans would still support his impeachment trial. They would still be, you know, say that he didn't commit a crime, because I think political parties are much more powerful than someone's race, right? Yeah.
I agree with you. So now I'm gonna ask like one or two questions that I feel like it's more personal that I want to ask.
Yeah, please.
So how do you feel that immigrants who come to United States, do you think they contribute to the community?
Yes, absolutely, without a doubt. I mean, my own mother, my own cousin, they've been amazing people to this country. You know, I have never met an individual, I mean, maybe because I'm biased because I'm in New York, but I've never not seen a hardworking immigrant in my life. And it could be just biased because I know my mother, I know my cousin, I know the people that I've worked with, and they all have been exceptional people. But when you're an immigrant here, there are a lot of benefits in terms of income and having a greater lifestyle for yourself, but there's a lot of negatives that come along with that, with racism, with certain stigmatizations that go along with being an immigrant or not speaking English. I know a lot of people who have been bullied who go to schools because they don't know English.
Okay.
It's a bit traumatizing for immigrants as well.
Yeah. So, what challenge did some immigrants face in the U.S., like now?
Yeah, I think now specifically with everything that's going on, I think when... I don't know if you remember, but a while ago there was a caravan that was coming, like, I don't remember.
Oh, from Mexico?
Yeah, it was crossing through, exactly.
South America.
Yes, exactly. And because they were escaping for refuge, right?
Yeah.
And, like, had I been the president, I would have been like, yes, let's find a way for you to make it here. Let's find you jobs. Let's find you homes. Because if something was happening to the United States, other countries hopefully would want to accept us, right? So we want to... Because I don't know whether it's like Venezuela, I don't know. But anyways.
Yeah, I see in the news that a lot of people from Venezuela, they moved to Dominican Republic.
Exactly.
Because the government is not really well, the society.
Exactly.
I feel the same way. If any person that have like any problem with in their own country, if they have the chance to move out, the country they move out, they need to give... hear the people and accept the people's problem.
And I think the U.S. has the resources to let immigrants come here. I think there's just like such an old, stilted way in how they think about immigrants that like they don't benefit, they take from the community. But it's like, no, it's a mutual thing. They're also paying taxes and they don't get their tax back.
Yeah, and also I feel that if we have any more immigrants, it's going to be more helpful to the economy because it's going to be more... gonna be more job and gonna be more people who gonna work.
Yeah, I also think that in having immigrants come here, it also helps the infrastructure of their home country because those people who are here making money will send monies to their families and then that country will be better off as well.
Yeah, that was my personal question, so thank you so much for the interview.
Yeah, of course, Ezekiel, anytime.